Movie News, your weekly source for film headlines, previews, and reviews, all in glorious podcast form. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fox, and with us as always, we have fellow Geek Scholars, Jill.
Hello, everyone.
And Lauren.
Hi, guys. Welcome to episode 113. On this week's show, we've got a retrospective movie review of Leon the Professional, as well as a current review of Thor the Dark World, and we'll do a spoiler session for that after the credits. I've also carved out some time later for some listener trivia, but right now we're going to jump into a whole bunch of movie rumors in a Never Tell Me the Odds segment. Included in this week's segment, I've got potential news about Star Wars Episode 7, as well as Ghostbusters 3, but we'll start with some Batman vs. Superman rumors. What we already know is that Ben Affleck will play an older, grizzled Batman, and Henry Cavill is set to reprise his role as Superman from Man of Steel. What we're hearing now is that several women are testing for a role of some sort, and the list of ladies includes Jamie Alexander, who plays Sif in the Thor movies, Olga Kurylenko, who is Julia in this year's Oblivion, Gal Gadot, who plays Giselle in the Fast and Furious series, and Elodie Young, who we recently saw as Jinx in G.I. Joe Retaliation. So, apparently the casting call is for females who are tall, brunette, athletic, and exotic.
Who could that be?
I wonder, well, in the DC universe.
Right.
Well, all the women I mentioned clearly fit that description. People are now wondering if the role in question is none other than Wonder Woman. Jill, what are the odds that this is a casting for Diana Prince herself?
Well, and we should clarify for our listeners, Diana Prince is sort of the
alter ego.
Of Wonder Woman. Yeah.
Yep.
I think very high. So I'm going to say 80%. There's been a couple of reasons that this rumor has come about. George Silverman, who's the Warner Brother president of creative development and worldwide, production, was asked specifically about this. And he really dodged the question.
Nervously.
Yeah.
Hmm.
If you listen to his interview, it really sounds like she's going to be a part of it. Now, some folks think that maybe this is really casting for Bruce Wayne's love interest, and certainly that's a possibility. Could it even be both? I mean, for sure. But I think there's a really good chance that they're going to want to bring Wonder Woman into this.
All right, so who can give me some background on Wonder Woman the character?
Yeah, I can jump in there. I mean, Wonder Woman's been around for a very, very long time in the DC universe. She's gone through several iterations. She was an Amazonian princess originally. Now in the New 52, which is when all of the characters in the DC universe were rebooted, she's now sort of the daughter of Zeus, more or less, and a god descended from the gods. Interestingly enough, in the New 52, she has a romantic relationship with Superman, something that was never really explored previously. What we do know is that Wonder Woman is extremely powerful. She, as you said, she's athletic, exotic. She fits the exact description.
She's got magic bracelets.
She does have magic bracelets that deflect pretty much everything. She apparently sometimes has a lasso of truth, which is exactly what it's, oh yeah, very hot. Golden, wrap it around you. You have to tell her everything you need to know. She's a very tortured person though. In all the iterations, she's constantly struggling with her power and even further psychologically because she is very beholden to her people and feels a responsibility to keep them safe.
All right. So, assuming they are in fact casting Wonder Woman, do you see a front runner in this group anywhere? Chris?
I'll say, I mean, if you got anybody to choose from, I think the clear choice from this set is Jamie Alexander.
Yeah.
We just watched her today, in fact, as Sif in Thor 2, and she's outstanding, and she just looks like Wonder Woman. She's got such a strong, striking physique. I think she'd be great to see playing the part.
But do you really think that she can be the leading contender, given her role in Thor, given what a big role that's been?
Oh, I think she can be the leading contender for DC. I don't think Marvel is going to have any interest in letting her do that.
That's what I mean. You think that it's realistic that she might actually take a role with DC?
So it's not outside the realm of possibility. I'll point to Colby Smulders, who did Maria Hill in the Avengers. She's also doing the voice of Wonder Woman in the Lego DC comic universe.
Yeah. I've heard a similar thing that I think DC wants Jamie Alexander, but I've heard that due to her Marvel contractual obligation, she will not be able to. Now, it's funny, when I hear that, though, it makes me wonder, what is she contractually obligated to star in next? She just finished Thor 2. So if she really has a scheduling conflict, what is it? Is it Guardians? Is it Avengers 2? That's the thing. It sounds very concrete that there's a reason she can't be in this beyond just the fact that she's a Marvel person. So with that in mind, I would go with Olga Kurylenko. I think of her role more even in Skyfall. She played the prostitute turned good who helps James Bond find Javier Bardem. I'm going to forget his... He looked like Gollum. I forget his actual name in the movie. But she was really wonderful in that, playing a strong, independent, kick-ass woman. I think she would fit this role pretty well.
And she did a really nice job in Oblivion,
too.
I will say, for me, those were definitely the names that stood out. The other two, Gal Gadot and Elodie Young, I don't think they were that memorable in either of those movies. Yeah. I mean, I've seen both those movies. I still had to look at a picture to see which character they were, you know?
Both of those were sequels and, you know, maybe not super dense on character development.
Right. I agree. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I think Elodie Young, especially given a good role, could really stand out.
I'll chime in and I'll say, I agree with you. I think there's a 90% chance we see Diana Prince. I would say there's only like a 20% chance we see the Wonder Woman switch over in Batman vs. Superman, for my odds.
You think she's going to be in there as Diana Prince,
yes,
but not
only Diana
not
Prince
as Wonder Woman?
Yes, that is my guess.
You think they're going to bring Wonder Woman back for future movies?
Absolutely. Well, they're going to test it out and see how it flies. And if it works well, then yes. Because, I mean, they want to be the Avengers.
Diana Prince is really like, it's like saying Clark Kent will show up, but not Superman. I mean,
I have a hard time believing that.
We'll see. Yeah.
All right, well, let's stay on Batman versus Superman for a little bit longer with the speculation that the character of Nightwing will play a prominent role in the story. We even have a rumored frontrunner for the part, and that's Adam Driver, who has appeared in several things, but is probably most well-known for playing a recurring role as Adam Sackler on HBO's Girls. Let's start with some background on Nightwing. Chris?
Sure. So Nightwing, people may not recognize who are not big into comic books, but everybody will know who this guy is because it is Dick Grayson, the original Robin to Batman. Basically, when he turned 18, he got old enough that Batman sort of felt weird wandering around with him as a sidekick or felt like he could strike out on his own. And so he sent him off to do his own thing. And Dick Grayson took up the mantle Nightwing, and where he took that inspiration is, there's a whole story there. But he struck out on his own and started fighting crime under this persona, basically as a secondary Batman. And he eventually traveled on from Gotham City to other places to do his thing.
Now, I know we don't know much about this universe yet, as the project is just sort of starting to come together. But what are the odds that Nightwing is a part of it? Anyone?
I think it's pretty high, actually. I get why some people would say, well, why wouldn't you just introduce a Robin character because that's more recognizable? But I think that because Batman is going to be older, it would make sense that the Robin persona is also older, which would be the Nightwing character. I think it fits with what we know so far about this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And just from an expositional perspective, it's nice to give Batman somebody he can talk to about his plans, about what he's thinking, and this would be that other stand-in character for the audience.
Although there's some thought that it's going to be far enough into their storyline that they're not really going to be on great terms.
But I think it's okay. I think they're not going to be on great terms, but still have a relationship that they respect each other. I think that's important because I think he's going to be at such odds with Superman. He's going to need to rely on somebody, and that'll make for an interesting foil.
I really hope that they do these characters justice. You know, if Nightwing and Wonder Woman are included, these are characters that haven't seen much of the big screen. And I would love for them to spend a little time developing them and their relationships with other people and not just throwing them out there.
True. So does anyone besides me have some serious thoughts about Adam Driver as Nightwing?
I do, actually. I just recently saw him in Francis Ha. He played Lev Shapiro, which was sort of a love interest in the main character, more of a friend. And he was really good. He actually had some really wonderful comedic timing. It was a little bit awkward, but was kind of a really great character. And I could see him putting a lot of effort into making this sort of tortured Nightwing persona. Now, what I also think is really interesting is Adam Driver is a former Marine. He's a big dude. He's 6'3". He's actually the same size as Batman. You know, and you can see him kind of growing up to being the same size as Batman and looking him in the eye and being like, I don't need you anymore, which I think is an important part of this role.
Lauren, do you watch Girls?
I have seen enough of Girls to not be able to see him as anything but a giant goof. So, yeah, that's the issue I'm having.
Okay, well, tell us more. I mean, I have not seen Girls, so you explain what your thoughts on this.
He plays this just intentionally detestable character. He's a morally terrible, worthless, self-centered human being, and just goofy, floppy-haired, awkward, and goofy, which is really not what I think when I think, protege superhero.
He's awful. He's just the kind of person you physically want to punch in the face every time you see him.
Now, I would like to say this is the same guy who got a role in Steven Spielberg's Lincoln and the upcoming Coen Brothers Inside Llewyn Davis. So this this guy has some range if he's able to procure all those different kinds of roles. And it's someone who you'd like to see take on a superhero role, I assume, right? And
certainly if he made it through the Marine Corps, he can't really be like that in real life. Yeah. I wonder So let's keep the rumor train rolling right along here. The next one is just for you, Fox. It's about that project that you hate to love to hate. Ghostbusters 3.
Yeah.
So reports are coming in that not only is Sony mere moments away from greenlighting the long-speculated sequel, but also they put out offers to Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, who both previously appeared in Superbad, to star.
Mm-hmm.
So, Fox, what are the odds that any of this is true, given the mountain of false hope and false reports we've gotten in the past?
Right. I will say this. I will say it's about 95% true that offers have gone out to Jonah Hill and Emma Stone. However, they are about 5 or 6 years too late. If this had been done and it was fast-tracked in 2007, right when Superbad had come out, then I would have said that these people would have signed on and gotten their paychecks and thought they were going to be get the franchise tag on them and made history.
Yeah.
Right now, though, Sony is way behind. These people are not going to sign on for Ghostbusters 3. Jonah Hill and Emma Stone are about to appear in The Wolf of Wall Street together. Jonah Hill was already nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Moneyball. He in no way needs that. Now, to be fair, Jonah Hill is about the same age as I am. And if I would like to think that if I were an actor in Hollywood and someone offered me Ghostbusters 3, I wouldn't even need to see a script. I would just say, yes, where do I sign? So I think the problem is what I don't know about these two people is their love of Ghostbusters, because if it's not high, it ain't happening.
This almost seems like a joke. It's so passe. I mean, people have been, you know, how many years have people been saying, oh, there's going to be a Ghostbusters 3 and have been at the top of this list for a lot of years. I mean, probably since Superbad. And I mean, I feel like everybody's just rolling their eyes at the idea that they've now been finally offered something at
this
point in the game.
All right, I'm going to make you guys go out on a limb here and lock it down. Give me numbers. What do you think the odds that this happens?
I already said 10%.
10% from Fox. Chris, what do you think?
I think 15%.
Jill?
Yeah, I'm going to go 5.
All right, fair enough. So it wouldn't be a week of rumors if we didn't somehow squeeze in some Star Wars Episode 7 junk into the mix.
It's been a while.
Before we get to that, though, we do actually have a piece of confirmed news. The release date for the 7th installment of the series will be December 15th, 2015, giving the studio the maximum amount of time possible to make that crazy 2015 promise come true. But on to the speculation. I'm going to combine a new casting rumor with an old one here. So let's begin with Chiwetel Ejiofor. The prolific thespian who is almost certain to garner a Best Actor nomination for his work in this year's 12 Years a Slave, he's potentially up for a role in Episode 7. Ejiofor has also appeared in 2012 and even in Serenity, playing the sort of nameless antagonist. But wait, there's more. This is a bit older, but also rumored to be up for a role is Benedict Cumberbatch, best known for playing the lead in BBC's Sherlock and as Khan in this year's Star Trek Into Darkness, which, like Episode 7, was directed by J.J. Abrams.
Right.
Jill, would you like to start with Ejiofor? What are the odds he pops up in Episode 7?
I'm going to say fairly high. I'm going to say...
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to say 80%. But I think the way that this rumor got started is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, basically, he was caught walking down the hall at Bad Robot. You know,
that
nobody...
means he's definitely in Episode 7.
Nobody has any idea why he was there, what he was doing.
Got lost. I mean, needed a bathroom. He was hungry, wanted a sandwich. Who knows?
And I mean, of course... J.J. Abrams was asked about it and said, I can't tell you anything, but he's a very talented actor. And, you know, Ejiofor essentially said
the same thing.
I'm not going to say anything. Great project. You know, I think that this is one of those things where they may have gotten caught. You know, he may have gotten caught with toilet paper on his shoe, per se.
I think that J.J. Abrams, basically, when it was decided Episode 7 was going to be made, Either agents did one of two things. Either every agent of every great actor was called or every agent called J.J. Abrams. So I think almost everyone under the sun in some way has been considered for Episode 7. And either like, what is your interest? Now, to be fair, Ejiofor, he did Serenity and he was wonderful in that. And I think that he likes science fiction. I think that he's someone you might consider calling, but his stock is about to go way
the
hell up with 12 Years a Slave. So I think at this point, I'll give him a 40% chance of because I think what's going to happen is agent may be like, looking at all the bad stuff that's going on the production right now, from an outsider's perspective, unless there's something we don't know, this thing looks like a train wreck waiting to happen. They've switched out their writers. J.J. Abrams has publicly said she's not sure if he can hit the release date. That's not a project you're like willing to hit your star to, kind of thing. And I'm a little bit on the fence about whether or not he actually signs on.
I actually find the problem with things like this, and really Ghostbusters too, is if they flop, they're going to flop hard,
right,
and loud.
You'll never recover.
And Hayden, I mean, everybody gets attached to projects that don't do well at some point. But these, if they don't do well, they're not going to not do well really in a big way.
That said, there's definitely a school that, you know, there's no such thing as a bad publicity. And even if he's garnering lots of awards for these smaller independent pictures, there is no better way to get your name out there and get the next big, big budget project than getting in front of 100 million eyeballs.
Yeah.
And Episode 7 is an easy way to do that. So he may just see this as the ticket to the next best thing. And it doesn't necessarily murder your career if you're in a terrible movie. I mean,
if you have an Oscar under your belt for release.
Right, exactly.
The prequel certainly didn't destroy everybody, although you're right about Hayden Christensen. Natalie Portman, I think, has been in a few things since then.
I mean, most of the actors who were in it weren't completely blamed for the failure of the prequels.
Right.
Yeah, but all the good actors said they wish they hadn't been in it afterwards.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, well, what do you make of Benedict Cumberbatch? In it or not?
I think Benedict Cumberbatch is a better bet, honestly, than Ejiofor, because he fills a role that's spectacular. He's a guy, an established British actor who is enormously hot right now, who I think would like to be involved with this project because he is a little bit of a nerd. And he's a guy like Sir Alec Guinness. I mean, certainly not quite of the same stature, but he brings a certain gravitas to the project that would go over really well. I think the odds of this are quite high. Plus, he's exactly the right age to sort of be an early apprentice of Luke and Leia and Han and that crew. I think the odds are quite high. I'm saying 60%.
I'm going to disagree with one thing you said. I don't think he's a little bit of a nerd. I think he's a huge nerd. I think Cumberbatch's involvement in this is super high. I'm going to go as high as 85%.
Yep.
And it's mostly because of, A, the relationship he already has with J.J. Abrams. But he recently was on the Graham Norton show and did an impression of Chewbacca that made Harrison Ford jump out of his seat. He was sitting next to Harrison Ford. If you haven't seen the clip, it's amazing. So he's clearly a Star Wars nerd. But I will disagree with you, Chris. Can you kind of imply he's going to be on the light side? He's a Sith. He's a Sith Lord all the way. And I will say that's probably the person who got Ejiofor in the door. They starred together in 12 Years a Slave. So I can imagine Cumberbatch told Abrams, you got to check this guy out. And that's where the meeting came from.
Interesting.
All right. Well, we're going to turn now to a newer segment on Geek Scholars Movie News, Listener Movie Trivia, where listeners can call in to prove their movie acumen. Every now and then, we're going to let contestants who want to try their luck at geeky movie trivia take a shot at our prize, which is a retrospective review of any film of their choosing. Fox, you want to get a player on the line?
Absolutely.
Hi, who's this?
It's Oliver.
Hi, and where are you calling from, Oliver?
I'm calling from England.
Oh, from England. Where in England?
A place called Leeds, just in the north of England.
Oh, very cool. And what do you do in Leeds?
Well, I'm not there at the moment, actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm at university, just across the other side of the country.
Oh, very cool. And what are you studying?
Sports journalism.
Sports journalism. Very cool. Very cool indeed. So tell me, Albert, what are some of your all-time favorite movies?
Oh, I've got to love this question as a film fan. The Avengers.
Okay.
Scott Pilgrim.
Uh-huh.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump, okay. Excellent.
And The Mummy.
The Mummy. Oh, that's always a fun one as well.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to Geek Scholars Movie News Trivia. I'm going to start out by giving you three movies to choose to answer trivia about. For the film of your choice, I'm going to give you five questions. And if you get four of those questions correct, you'll receive our prize. The Geek Scholars will perform a retrospective review of any movie of your choosing and dedicate it to you. Are you ready to play?
I am.
Okay, which of the following movies would you like? And I think you're going to enjoy these choices as we have this week. Raiders of the Lost Ark, 1981, Hook, 1991, or one of your favorites, Scott Pilgrim versus the World from 2010.
That's got to be Scott Pilgrim, man.
All right, of course. I had a feeling you were going to choose that. Okay, well, here is your first question. What genre of popular activity is Scott Pilgrim versus the World modeled after? Is it A, video games, B, American football, C, real football, or D, dressage?
Ooh, video games?
Yeah, that's the correct answer. You took a little bit longer than I expected on that one. All right. Question number two. How many evil exes must Scott Pilgrim fight to win the right to date Ramona?
Seven.
That is absolutely correct. The seven evil X's. Well done, sir. Question number three. Scott Pilgrim is actually romantically involved with someone else by the time he meets Ramona. What is her name?
That would be Knives Chow.
That is correct. The infamous Knives Chow has a bit of a spitfire over there. For your next question, number four, what is the name of Scott Pilgrim's Super Mario-inspired band?
Sex Bob-omb.
That's Sex Bob-omb. Excellent. They rock out like the best of them. Excellent. Well done, sir. Okay, you got 4 out of 5. You've already won, but I'm going to give you your fifth question. One of the evil exes is played by one-time Superman Brandon Routh from Superman Returns. Much like Superman's power is derived from our yellow sun, Roof's character Todd also has superhuman power, but his is from being a what?
His powers come from being a vegan.
That is absolutely correct, sir. Well done. That is 5 out of 5.
Thank you.
Very, very good job. So you win our prize, which means the crew of the Geek Scholars Movie News will do a retrospective review of any movie of your choosing. Which movie would you like us to do?
I'll go with the movie I was discussing the other day with someone. The Adjustment Bureau.
The Adjustment Bureau. Excellent. Matt Damon, very good. We would be happy to do that for you. Thank you so much for playing, Oliver.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
All right. Congratulations to Oliver. We'll get started on our review of The Adjustment Bureau, which will air on an upcoming show. And speaking of which, we're going to make good on a previous listener's win right now. A few weeks back, Daniel from Franklin, Tennessee, called in and correctly answered questions about Fargo, and he's asked us to do a retrospective review of the 1994 movie Leon the Professional. This film stars Jean Reno as Leon the Cleaner, a.k.a. Hitman, who takes in a young girl, played by a tiny Natalie Portman, after her family is brutally murdered. The two form a bond as Leon teaches the girl about his way of life and profession. So, what did you guys like about this? Personally, I loved it. I'm curious to hear what you all have to think.
Oh, good. What did you like about it?
It was just a really great work of cinematography. The whole thing was sort of shot like a comic book. Did you notice that?
Yes.
It kept cropping up for me.
It's funny because that was the thing I took away from it. And I think it was fortunate that I knew the story, that I kind of was able to sit back and just enjoy the way it was shot. And you're right, Lauren. It was gorgeous. And I couldn't believe how amazingly beautiful it was. Especially, I'm not giving too much away. There's a death sequence or a sort of a precursor to a death sequence, which I thought was absolutely artistic, and it was beautiful. They used choices of colors and black and white, and it was really interesting. And the whole film just made me smile because I was taking in just the way it was shot. It was awesome.
Yeah. It had me from the absolute first scene where it's just a conversation between two characters, but you never even see their mouths move. The camera is so tight on their faces, just they're really an eye, and you get every bit of the micro expression as you're hearing what they say. It's a beautifully acted and a wonderfully shot little moment.
Yeah. I think this might be my favorite movie of Natalie Portman's.
What? Her first movie, I might ask.
Really, really good at it. That is true.
I mean, really, I'm trying to think of something else that I thought she did as good a job
Attack of the Clones.
I mean, right?
Snobbed.
She did a great job as this girl, and she made her a rather complex character. Okay. Jean Reno also did an excellent job with his character.
Oh my gosh,
and I loved watching her become his protege. I mean, it was excellent.
It is amazing how deeply complex, you know, hitmen, I think, in movies are usually done very so one-dimensionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I had forgotten what levels of depth that Jean Reno was able to convey, this sort of paternal nature, yet sort of an equal partnership nature. Like, he goes through these very different emotions that I thought were incredible and very deep. Like, I know what he eats for breakfast. I know what I know how he sees women. I know how he sees his enemies. I know how he can detach himself from humanity, which is amazing.
Leave it to the French to make a movie about mafia hitmen, all about character development and relationships.
Right.
Yes, of course.
All right.
One question that Daniel had was, how does this stand up today? And I feel like I did not see it when it came out. This was the first time I had seen it. So I feel like I can speak well to that. I thought it was excellent, but it's excellent today.
It
stands up very well.
Absolutely.
We did see I didn't realize at the time, but we did see the extended version of this film as opposed to the original theatrical cut, and it is about 20 minutes longer, and the director-writer, Luc Besson, has said that the extended version is not really what he considers the director's cut. It does drag a little bit. You get a little more of that relationship between the two main characters, but it's maybe not totally necessary, so I would maybe recommend that original cut of the movie if you're looking for one of the two. This was actually the movie that Luc Besson did right before he did The Fifth Element.
Right.
So particularly in the early stages of this movie, we have this sort of grizzled main character coming across this bizarre younger female protege character, and I couldn't help running those comparisons in my mind. It was really fun to think about that.
Oh my god, and how creepy is
Gary Oldman.
Oh my god,
at peak creepy Gary Oldman.
Yes. Pretty amazing. I love comparing it to The Fifth Element and thinking about how he sort of cartooned up a similar character.
Yeah, it's the same character, just, you know, with animated, basically.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, negatives to speak of?
Negative. Why didn't Luc Besson do anything else of merit? That's my negative. After seeing this movie, I was like, I'm so angry. I look at The Transporter, and The Fifth Element was fine. I mean, he's done, but he just did The Family.
The Fifth Element was good. Transporter was a fun, stupid action movie. Taken has its fans, although I'm not one of them.
But I mean, you compare, if you put Taken on the table next to this, you would never believe it was made by the same person ever. And he didn't even want to do this. He was like pissed off because Fifth Element was in delays because of Bruce Willis, and he's like, I guess I'll do this other project I don't really care about, which I think is the far superior. It's the best thing in his entire library. So that's my negative.
Wait, possibly.
I'll say as a negative, this is not a movie for everybody. I mean, it's very well done, but it's I mean, it's really violent.
You don't want to watch it with your
graphics. Some of the violence, especially violence as it pertains to children, is going to be super disturbing for people. So while it's one of those movies, I will say I appreciate very much. There are going to be lots of people who watch this and think it's just horrific. And it is. I mean, it is. It's got a lot of violence.
I have one very silly complaint, and that is this is firmly of the sort of 90s school of action acting where they give some actor who's never held a gun some automatic weapon and tell him to point it that way and pull the trigger. These people are supposed to be like gun thug professionals, and it is some of the worst gunplay I have ever actually seen on film. But that is a tiny, ridiculous complaint.
You only
said
30 people to kill one hitman. That's all you need, really.
Right.
All right. Well, what did you give it for a final grade?
I give it an A.
Solid A.
Me too.
I would say A-, which is pretty much a Lauren A.
It's a Lauren A+.
Jeez almighty.
All right. Well, our second movie review for this week is naturally Thor: The Dark World. Chris Hemsworth returns to the Marvel Cinematic Universe once again as Thor, this time teaming up with his brother Loki, once again played by Tom Hiddleston, to stop an ancient threat from consuming several worlds, including the Earth. We'll start with a spoiler-free discussion, and after the show, we'll talk through more of the details, including our thoughts on the secret scenes after the credits. But for now, let's start with the positives. What did you like?
Tom Hiddleston.
Yes.
And, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this, if you've seen the movie, you understand why, and that may be an obvious pick, but gosh almighty, it's amazing how someone who's played this role now for the third time can find ways to expand a character that was already really deep and already really interesting, and to give him levels of, dare I say, humanity that had not been seen before, and he really took the character to new places, in places I wasn't expecting. And that was a real treat because he's such a great actor and he really does a wonderful job interacting, especially with Chris Hemsworth as Thor, and dives even deeper into that relationship, which I was just really impressed with.
I just like his smile.
I'll tell you, my favorite thing about this movie is, you know, enormous end of the universe plot points aside, just spending more time in this sort of movie continuity and getting the drill down of these characters, just the funny little moments. Some of the best and funniest moments were just little one-offs between the characters, clearly just having fun, putting these two people in a room and seeing how they interact with each other. There were some really great script moments there.
Yeah, there was more humor than I think I expected in this movie. There was a lot of just, I don't know, physical comedy as well as comedy in the lines that made it really funny. I think they did a great job sort of as a part of that, playing with the different dimensions or the different worlds, you know, and the tie-in between.
I think something I was very happy with is that the secondary characters given less to do in Thor 1 were given more to do in the Dark World.
Definitely. I was just about to say that's one of my major strengths.
Exactly.
I think they got a lot more for their supporting cast
they
to
did.
Do in this
especially
one.
Especially Idris Elba
choice.
And Rene Russo. I would call
exactly.
out
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Because I remember that was my complaint with the first movie. You have these two great actors who had a few lines, had a few good moments, but they were given a lot more to do in this one. And they put some of the supporting actors who had more of a role in the first one more in the background this one, which I'm fine with if you take the two movies together.
Yep, definitely. All right. Well, what did we not like? What were the drawbacks?
I was a little bit disappointed in what Christopher Eccleston had to do.
Agreed.
I was super excited
Absolutely
to see
agreed.
Him on screen. And he was just such a cookie cutter, destroy the world, evil villain.
Anybody
I got
could have
none
played
of
that.
What his motivations were about or what these people, what their lifestyle was like, what they were really trying to accomplish by what they were doing. I was really disappointed in that aspect of the movie.
I'm going to complain about Natalie Portman.
Okay.
I thought that she was really two-dimensional. I mean, you think of all the things that she could have done. She just stood around. I mean, she just stood around while stuff was happening around her. And there were certain parts in the movie, especially, where she had the ability to affect what was going on, and she just stood there.
I agree. I mean, in the first Thor, she really made use of her intellect. Like, she was really instrumental in understanding the science, and you really believed that she added something to the plot because she had information, scientific information about what was going on, which was kind of interesting. And to your point, Chris, I think as a general complaint of this movie, while we got so much more interesting depth into some of the characters that already existed, there was nobody new. And that's something I was kind of missing. Like, as we expand this Marvel Cinematic Universe, I'm kind of looking to expect more, not just a one-off, not just references to past movies and then the same characters going deeper into them. But I want to see new characters that I can get invested in. Almost every new character that was put into this movie, I've forgotten them already.
That said, maybe we're bumping up against the edges of this universe. You know, they have to be a little bit judicious in the ways that they're going to expand.
Yeah, maybe.
Given we've already got a very large pantheon of characters for a movie universe.
Right.
All right. What would you give it for a final grade?
I'm going to go B+.
I'd go B.
I'm going to go A-. I thought that the action sequences made up for all the character faults.
I actually wrote down in my notes A-/B+ because I was on the fence. I'm going to go with Chris on this and say B+. I think it just doesn't come in quite as sharp as some of the other Marvel movies.
I agree. Is this your least favorite Marvel movie so far?
Wow. Does Incredible Hulk count?
No.
Oh.
I mean, of the Marvel since the first Iron Man.
I more than Gosh. I liked Iron Man 2.
I
agree.
Yeah.
I'm with you there.
I liked Iron Man 2. I don't know. I got to come back to that.
All right.
It's a great question. I like them all. So it's hard to, it's not like it's Cars.
He gave it an A-.
Yeah, it's not like it's Cars in the Pixar universe. It's not nearly as off-putting.
All right. Well, do you guys want to know how you did with your predictions for
Absolutely.
How well it was going to do?
Sure, yeah.
I don't really want to know.
It's not
or
terrible.
I already know and I don't
off.
Need you to say.
All right. Well, Jill, looks like you went 75% with critics and 120 million. Fox, you're at 83%, 105 million. And Chris, you were at 80% positive, 85 million. The actual came in 64% positive. So
That's
you're all a
ridiculous.
Little bit high. Yeah. Jill, you were closest. And the opening weekend box office, $86.1
million,
which
there,
means
man.
That
Chris,
Chris
is there.
Nailed it pretty
Boom.
Much.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
Not terrible. Good work, guys. And just a note, Thor was at 84% positive when it opened a week earlier overseas, UK, Australia, etc. But it then dropped 20 points when U.S. critics got their hands on it. Interesting, right?
Yeah. Clearly, Americans don't understand what the British find awesome. That's really how it's always been. It's a further confirmation of that.
Americans are just not typically that discerning in their tastes, I wouldn't say.
You just made me sick.
All right, Jill, what do we have to look forward to in wide release?
November 15th is a little quiet now that The Wolf of Wall Street's moved to late December. The biggest release is The Best Man Holiday, which is a reunion sequel to the 1999 comedy about a group of friends with varying types of relationships within their circle. This movie picks up 15 years later, checking in on where the characters have gone since the first film, and it's rated R.
Chris, what do you have in limited release?
I got three smaller release movies. First one is Nebraska, which stars Bruce Dern and Will Forte as a father-son duo on a road trip to collect, at least what the father believes, are his winnings from a publisher's clearinghouse type of sweepstakes. It's a dramatic and apparently subtle comedy, and it comes from director Alexander Payne, who you ought to recognize if you don't, because he just did Sideways and The Descendants.
It's gotten a lot of good
That's
reviews.
Rated R. Yeah, pretty good, pretty solid dude. Next up, I've got Sunlight Jr., starring Matt Dillon and Naomi Watts as a couple struggling through poverty who are constantly trying to see the upsides to life.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. Last one I've got for you is Dear Mr. Watterson,
yes,
a documentary about the comic strip Calvin and Hobbes and the impact it had on our culture.
I am so excited about that film. I hope there's a chance we may get to review it early. That's all.
That'd
I'm
be
saying.
Awesome.
That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, let's finish out with a few quickies. Chris, Marvel and Netflix has announced a deal that will make a series out of Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Iron Fist. Does this mean we won't see these characters in movies anytime soon?
No, I think it increases the odds that we will see them in movies eventually. These are smaller characters. They have smaller, more niche fan bases, but I'm really, really excited by the prospects here, getting to see them on a screen of any size, particularly the character Jessica Jones, who is a fun one. She's sort of the Veronica Mars or Jennifer Garner in Alias of the Marvel Universe. She's a superheroic person who gives up the life of a superhero to become a private detective. It's very cool. I can't wait to see how this Defender series comes together.
All right, Fox, the director of The Wolverine, James Mangold, will reportedly make another standalone Wolverine movie with Hugh Jackman. I think this sucks. What do you think?
I think you're right.
Fair enough. Last one. Jill, Jon Favreau is in talks to direct a new live-action adaptation of Disney's The Jungle Book. Is this a good project for his skill set?
I actually think it's a pretty good pick. So if you think about Elf, you know, he knows how to do the family,
Zathora,
fun family comedy. Yeah. If you think about things like Iron Man, he obviously knows how to do an action movie. I think he can bring those skills together and do something fun with this.
How are we going to have a live action dancing bear?
The bear necessities. John Goodman's going to play it.
Sorry.
It's brilliant. All right, that's it for this week's show. As always, we encourage you to subscribe to the Geek Scholars Movie News Podcast on iTunes. While you're there, don't forget to give us a review and to visit our website, geekscholars.com. Also, check out our brand new channel on YouTube. Just search for Geek Scholars. But before we go, Daniel, thank you so much for pointing out Leon the Professional to us. We really enjoyed doing that review.
Yeah.
And look forward to many more fun listener-inspired reviews in the future.
Speaking of which, we love hearing from all of you out there. So give us a shout at mail@geekscholars.com. Comment on our Facebook site. Do anything you can to get a hold of us because we like getting that feedback from you. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. We also want to encourage all of our listeners to check out eclipsemagazine.com, which is another great entertainment website, and the music of the 440 Alliance, who are an awesome bunch of guys who let us use their stuff. Until next week, this is Chris.
And Lauren.
And Jill.
And Fox saying, Matilda, I'm glad you don't have a stomachache anymore. I don't think it means anything.
Nice.
Don't stop.
Have a good week, everybody.
Malcolm.
Come over here and shut the f*** up.
Welcome to Geek Scholars. That should be our new tagline.
Welcome to Geek Scholars Movie News.
Hello and welcome to Geek Scholars Movie News. Come over here and shut the f*** up.
It's a little bit of an edgier show than you may be used to.
Gumberbatch. Oh, Gumberbatch.
Check for a gas leak in the house.
Right? Right? Oh, man.
And I'm the one who's still like, I'm like, every time you guys make a mistake, I drink more wine. Yeah.
We're your drinking game tonight.
When we were little, I used to always get those envelopes in the mail from Publishers Clearing House, and I think I was like kind of convinced that I might actually win. And so whenever my sister did anything that that made me upset, I would tell her that I wouldn't share my winnings.
That's awesome.
Kind of a great story.
Nice. Nice.
Wow.
All right. Thanks for sticking around. Welcome to our spoiler session for Thor: The Dark World. All right, guys. Let it rip.
Let's start with the ending, the closing, or the two closing sequences. The second one that was later in the movie kind of had no bearing. Thor comes back, kisses, you know, Natalie Portman. That's wonderful. What do you guys think of the other sort of post-credits sequence with Benicio del Toro?
So it's pretty interesting, right? This is our first glance at the Collector, who's going to be the most major player, or at least one of the major bad guys in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, which is coming out over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
This is our first look at him, and he is
creepy.
Creepy and weird in a way that Benicio del Toro often is, and it is a great pick to be.
I agree.
He's good at creepy and weird.
Exactly right. But probably the most important thing that's established in this scene is that the Tesseract, the cosmic cube, which we saw in the first Thor movie and in the Avengers, is apparently the first of the Infinity Stones, which we can only assume are linked to the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yes.
The second of which is the Ether, which is sort of the MacGuffin of this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. I thought what I think was really interesting is that what I took away from it, going a little bit further from that, is I think there was some question early on is whether or not Benicio del Toro was actually going to be Thanos. I think this dispels that completely.
Now, absolutely.
We know that Thanos is in Guardians of the Galaxy, which leads back to my original thought that Vin Diesel is actually Thanos.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Doing the voice, having a more computer animated character for Thanos himself.
But I thought it was a cool sequence. I think it's great that they're introducing the idea of the Infinity Gauntlet. It's a very well-known Avengers plot arc.
Man.
It would be really wonderful to see it introduced in Guardians of the Galaxy and then expanded upon, presumably, in Avengers 3 at this point.
Well, yeah, Joss Whedon has said from the very beginning that he basically sees Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet as the raison d'etre for the Avengers even existing.
Yes,
so
yeah.
It'll eventually come around, I assume, in Avengers 3.
Yeah.
The after-credit sequence, I find, is often sort of a tribute to the true fans of the series,
yes,
to the true fans of the comic book.
Yes.
And I feel like they did this perfectly.
Yes.
You know, this is something that if you weren't familiar with the series, you're probably not going to understand it at all.
Makes no sense whatsoever.
For people who know the comics and know the story, this was a huge reveal.
And honestly, the people who don't know it will go home and Google it. Because it came across quickly, and it was curious.
Yes,
I mean,
interesting.
It piqued your interest. Like, Benicio del Toro, basically Mugatu of the, from Zoolander, basically in this universe.
Yeah.
And he was wonderfully creepy, and it made you kind of curious. Like, whoa, what's going on next? And I like the connection to Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it was I wondered if they were going to make something quick to Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I was actually pretty impressed that they went a little bit further than that.
I did like that Captain America had a cameo.
Oh, it was so good.
Oh my gosh, that was the best moment of the entire movie.
That was really good. I mean, it was unexpected. It was something I didn't know was coming. You know, I kind of wonder, I likened it to when Wolverine popped up in X-Men First Class. I like this just as much, especially because he made fun of himself for 30 seconds, which was
fantastic.
Well,
it was the sort of meta greatness of it was it was Chris Evans pretending to be Tom Hiddleston as Loki,
pretending
which
Eddie,
was
yeah.
so
it was
funny.
Really good.
And he was perfect.
Chris Evans almost impersonation of Tom Hiddleston was worth the price of admission alone, which was
totally
great.
Agree. Yeah. Totally agree.
So what do you guys think of the ending? You know, Loki, is Odin dead? So we think that Odin passed away because, I mean, Loki's on the throne.
Yeah.
And Loki kind of implies that he gives the correct conversation to Thor to allow him to be now the ruler of Asgard. Is that what we think is going on there?
I think no. Okay. I think Odin is too big a character to not have some resolution.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can't not have a finishing to that story or a resolution or a death or something.
Yeah, Rene Russo had a great death as the mom, so you'd assume
you can't not do that
for
Anthony Hopkins. You
who
can't,
was great, as I might add. I thought I was impressed at how much he was had to do, and he was really good.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. What do you guys think of Loki? I mean, I think he was given more than I expected to see him do in this film. What do you guys think his role is going to be going forward in this Marvel Cinematic Universe?
It's interesting because certainly his bonds are forged stronger now with Thor than they have been. You know, he definitely was able to be an almost full compatriot
ally
of his brother finally for this common cause. And I think it's really apparent to me at the end that even though he struggles against sort of the worst elements of his nature, he does kind of want to be
a good guy,
fair and just and good leader, even if he doesn't know quite how to do it.
Well, especially considering the ending where Thor, not knowing who he's speaking to, speaks so highly of Loki repeatedly when he's pushed.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the interesting thing. Odin kind of pushes, Thor, Odin as Loki, pushes Thor to kind of speak more honestly, and Thor holds his ground. And that's that's going to be a really interesting component going forward. And you wonder if Loki will switch sides? I mean, I don't know. It would be interesting that they bring him back in future Avengers movie more as an ally than an antagonist.
I think you're never going to know for sure.
Which was the best part.
Yeah.
That's the
right.
I mean, in the movie, I remember when Loki cut off, there was twice that I was deceived, and it was all because of Loki, where he cut off Thor's hand.
That
was
great.
Was a little confused. Mm-hmm. And it was
the
awesome.
Whole movie theater just reacted so viscerally to that.
But I thought he was also dead. I thought that they gave him a good death sequence that was worthy of Loki that I thought fit the cinematic universe. But then, I mean, then he came back in a perfectly plausible way. And so I love that Actually, three times I was fooled by Loki. His sequence where his mother has died, putting on the face of strength to Thor.
Yeah,
and
so good.
That was one of my favorite sequences where
Thor
you
calls
see
him.
And they did the makeup in such a way that he looks haggard. Like, they actually changed his skin color to look like he hadn't eaten. To look like he was really psychologically disturbed and upset by this, and hated that he was upset by his mother, his surrogate mother dying, which I thought was a wonderful sequence. Like, again, these moments of brilliance with the characters.
Yeah. Can we talk about not so moments of brilliance with the characters?
Yes,
can I talk about Natalie Portman again?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so really what I was alluding to in the non-spoiler review that really got to me and confused me. One, okay, she just stands around. All these people die. She just stands around. She has the ether inside her. It gives her all these powers, and she doesn't use it. And I don't really understand why.
Do you know that? Can she use it? Does she know how to use it? That's the. I mean, I'm
teach
playing.
Her how. I
it
mean,
seems
she
like when she touches somebody, they
the
explode.
The
Maybe you try to do that on purpose once.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I likened it to Pepper Potts in the last Iron Man movie, where she was given powers and then did a lot with them in the final act. Yeah. And I kind of wondered, I thought they were going to do the same thing here, and they kind of missed the mark.
She just stood there, like, watching the movie go by.
In fact, they actually, you even said this to me at some point.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they had to remind people that she has several degrees by saying it in the dialogue.
They just keep saying in the dialogue, she's got all these PhDs.
But not using them. Yeah. And I have to say, Selvig kind of disappointed me as well. Was there ever an explanation why he was running around naked at Stonehenge? No. There was no explanation.
Yeah, there was.
He was crazy.
The explanation was basically that when Loki took over his mind, he got a little nuts.
Yeah, but that's not good.
That was
no,
the explanation.
That's not enough. No.
I mean, they addressed it. That was the.
That's not.
Presumably, Hawkeye is running around doing the same thing as underpants around town.
Dude, Hawkeye's running around naked. I'm not. Yeah.
No
I mean,
pants.
Yeah, really. No pants on Hawkeye. There's a lot of women who are very excited right now.
The thing that bugged me most about this movie, which was just so rough, was the threat was so weakly characterized. And I guess it's two things. The threat was so weakly characterized, and so many elements of this movie, so many critical plot points appeared to just be random luck dictating what was going on.
Yeah, especially like the sort of the lack of physics pockets that would pop up in different places. And fortunately, Chris Hemsworth, I thought, made good comedic use of them. When he gets on the tunnel, that is one of my favorite.
The train is so funny.
The underground, I should say. It's not the tunnel. It's the underground. I mean, that's really funny. I thought they really did a good job of trying to play up the comedic elements. But you're right. You can't ignore that. Like, why does the world always have to end? It doesn't have to be this big, like, if you don't stop them, it's the end of the world every time. Like, it would have been fine if there was someone who was interested in invading Asgard. Now, I will say the good thing that they did was they kind of tied in some earlier plot points, especially from the first Thor, like Loki knowing the back doors. I mean, that was a subtle thing. That's how he got the Frost Giants in the first movie, which I thought was clever. So at least some thought went into the scripts, but not enough. Can I ask a question about a character that was sort of replaced? Fandral.
Sure.
Zachary Levi took over the role of the fencer, one of the Warriors Three. What did you guys think of him being swapped in?
I'll tell you what was funny. The first time he showed up on screen, Lauren was like, who is that guy? And I was like, I don't think it's anybody we know.
Then the credits rolled, I was like, wait, that was
Zachary Levi? What the heck? Yeah. He so didn't look like himself.
No,
it was hilarious. But once I realized who it was, I was thinking back. It was just really funny to watch him in that role. And we all know what an enormous, enormous nerd he is.
Yeah.
For those who don't know Zachary Levi, he's most famous for playing Chuck on the TV show Chuck.
Tangled.
He also, at Comic-Con every year, hosts sort of a
nerd machine, raising
the
money
nerd machine,
for Operation,
which is a companion
Smile.
He's simultaneous.
Wonderful. Yeah, I thought he was great. It was funny because I had someone who was in the theater with us, and he like reached over and grabbed my sleeve. He's like, "That's Chuck, doing awesome stuff." And I was like, "Yeah,
yeah."
But he did. I actually thought he did a good job because he had to inhabit a character who was already established, and he could have just done his own thing. But he really kind of tried to emulate the previous actor, which I thought was kind of nice of him to do.
Yeah.
Any other qualms or interest? Is anyone else like really excited for Guardians of the Galaxy now after seeing that?
I don't know that I'm any more excited. I don't think it affected my excitement level either way.
I've seen Benicio del Toro. That kind of got me a little more excited.
Yeah.
A little bit.
This was good and I enjoyed it. I really want to see it again.
Hmm.
Sort of to rethink about some things. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it really changed my excitement level for any of the others. It was just sort of a piece, an average piece of what's a pretty fun puzzle.
All right. Sounds good.
I agree. Yeah, it is an average piece for a pretty fun puzzle. If it were not for all the sort of fun Marvel tie-in, funny character, lighthearted aside stuff, I think this would have been a way lower grade for me. It just wasn't necessarily that good of a movie, but in the entire context and what it stands for, when it's contributing to, the grade increases radically.
Do you guys have Captain America and Days of Future Past as previews in your theater?
Yes, we did, both of them.
I gotta say, that was one of the coolest things for me, was because we're the kind of people, we see them the day it comes out. But most people don't go on the internet every day. It was really awesome to be in a movie theater where people saw those two trailers back to back and their jaws drop, which was really kind of cool. People were clearly excited about both of those movies going forward, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Particularly the Captain America preview and the little bit with the elevator sequence where, you know, what did we like to step off? And the whole theater was just like, oh!
And we've Jill and I have been lucky to see that that sequence end to end. It's even better. It's going to be as good as you think it is, and it's long, which is phenomenal.
Wow.
So just that, as we can tell you that if you thought it was fun in the trailer, you're going to enjoy seeing it in the movie.
I can't wait.
There you go. All right. Thanks. All right. Thanks everyone for sticking around. We hope you have seen Thor if you're listening to this conversation. We'd love to hear what you thought of Thor. Did we miss anything?
All right. Take care, everybody.